Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for November 20th, 2016. I'm your host, David McLaughlin. Joining me as always, welcome Catherine Smith.
Greetings from Atlanta.
And welcome Tim Shiflett.
Good evening, sir.
Yes, well, we are in the, we've had the first full week of the post-election to really decipher, dissect, and see exactly, you know, where this administration's heading. And I think for a lot of us on the left side of the aisle, it's kind of what we expected, but not maybe what we hoped for after Trump's big election day speech or election night speech of reconciliation and coming together and serving all the people. But before we get into some of these appointments, let's talk about how people have been reacting. And there's been several incidents, and we don't mean just the protests we talked about last week, but on Friday night, Vice President-elect Mike Pence went to Hamilton. He got booed by the audience. I think there were some cheers, but more booing. And then the cast of Hamilton, I believe, at the end of the performance, they did their regular performance, actually had their thoughts on how America should really come together. And, you know, Mike Pence took it, if you will. He seemed to handle a lot better than Donald Trump and his Twitter did later on. Catherine, being the number one Hamilton aficionado on the show, I'm going to give you the first and longest thoughts on this.
Well, reading what the, you know, representative, I can't remember who it was that spoke, reading what he said, I mean, it was more of a sort of inspirational remark, you know, like, thank you for coming. I mean, it wasn't that harsh, you know, thank you for coming. I hope that you take something from this story of this American story. I didn't see it as harassment, and I don't think Mike Pence did either. I mean, it was a little bit out of the ordinary to call someone out at the end of the show. I mean, it is a little unusual, but I didn't find it. I mean, of course, I am me, and I. But I think that President-elect Trump took it way out of proportion. But you know, I think we'll talk in a minute about why that might be. So I wasn't surprised by it. I mean, the cast of Hamilton has been, they've all been outspoken about things, you know, throughout the performances, the run of the show. Lin-Manuel Miranda has been outspoken about a variety of things. So it's not, I don't think it should come as a big surprise.
Yeah, I'll give Mike Pence credit on this. He seems to be far thicker skinned than Donald Trump. Tim, would you agree with that assessment? Am I really going on a limb there?
He is a politician, Pence.
Yeah.
He understands things like this. When he heard that the other night, I believe his daughter was with him, and he said, now, this is the sound of freedom. And he was on one of the talk shows, and, you know, he didn't have any problem with it at all. This is Trump. The you know, he's just got a thin skin. I got a feeling that a lot of his supporters out there are going to have just as thin a skin, but they better get used to it because he's going to catch some flack. You know, they certainly threw it out at President Obama, and they're going to throw it out at this guy, too. And, you know, he better just learn how to handle it. It's like Trump relishes this confrontation with his Broadway show cast. I mean, come on. I mean, it's free speech in action. you know, but he's demanding an apology. You know,
and I love how he said, I said it wasn't, and from what I understand, it's not a very good show. It's won 11 Emmy.
Yeah.
Highly overrated, I believe.
Yeah, highly overrated.
Highly overrated. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. You know, one thing I thought was kind of weird.
A year long waiting list. It sold out for a year. First off, I'd like to know how Pence got in. You know.
Oh, well, you know. There's always front row Joe. There's always a front row Joe. Everybody's
I'm sure there is. But all they ask him to, you know, like things like uphold our values and work on behalf of all of us. And it just wasn't nothing there. I just said the actors harassed him. And, oh, man.
Well, but
I think it
served a purpose to distract us all from paying attention to the, you know, the minuscule settlement he made on the Trump university thing, and then we're also this whole thing that Melania and Barron are not going to be living in the White House, and all these other things that came up over the same period that nobody's paying attention to now because everybody's talking about Hamilton.
I thought they were going to keep this guy off of Twitter. He's the president-elect. What is he doing posting on Twitter?
Well, Tim, it didn't hurt him. It didn't hurt him before. Why is it going to hurt him now? That's his theory. Hey, you know, I did all my crazy tweets with taco bowls, and you know, I was still able to get 44% of the vote. You know, arousing 44% of the electorate. But let's kind of go back. One little point that I hadn't seen anywhere that struck me is, you know, Donald Trump is Mr. Manhattan, Mr. New York, mover and shaker, you know, lover and connoisseur of all things New York. How in the world has he not seen this play? Because it kind of got big before even he was, you know, full-time, you know, running for president a year ago. Catherine,
do you think he's a theater goer? I think he's
Mr. New York. I think he likes to see and be seen. I'm not saying he's a great critic of anything other than being critical, but I think he likes to do what's popular in the Big Apple.
Yeah, I don't see him as a theater goer. I just don't see it.
Yeah, I mean
you can be a big New Yorker and still not go to the theater. You can go to 21 for dinner, and you can go to, you know, Lincoln Center for whatever, and you can go to, but I think you can skip Broadway and still be a pretty big New Yorker. I just don't.
Yeah, I mean, I've been a New Yorker for 0 days of my life. I just assumed it would be something he would have wanted to take part in for whatever reason. I mean, I don't know, but we'll find out. He didn't see Cats and Rent and
I don't know all the Broadway plays.
Big, but I've heard of those too.
I don't see him in that. I don't think he has a long enough attention span.
That may be it. It may be his ADD. Tim, quick thought. I mean, why do you think he somehow missed this thing?
What, Trump?
Yeah, Trump missed Hamilton. I mean, how did he, you know, he wants to seem like Mr. New York, whether he is or not.
Yeah, this doesn't seem like Donald Trump's thing. You know, going to see something like that. I could see him more watching a Chorus Line or something, you know. Not Hamilton. Hey, that doesn't seem like Donald Trump's thing. It really
Yeah. I just know
he's going to call them all out, and he's going to scream apologize, and oh, my. Yeah.
Yeah, and of course, speaking of people he went on rant this week, another New York institution, Saturday Night Live, a show he's actually been on, you know, Alec Baldwin's skits have just been just amazing, and he had another really, really good one last night, and then he, of course, Donald Trump went to Twitter and said, nobody watches it, it's not funny anymore, which actually those skits have been as funny as they've had in a long time. Yeah, it's biased.
Oh, They've made fun. Well, I've been watching that show since it came on in the mid-70s. They've made fun of every president that has been in office the whole time that show's been on.
They were fierce against Jimmy Carter and Gerald Ford. Remember those?
Yeah.
Gerald Ford? They bordered on vicious.
Bill Clinton sketch when he was in the McDonald's eating everything that didn't move. I mean, I wish they would have 8 years to pan Hillary Clinton instead of Donald Trump. Some of them wish they had it too, but no, Donald Trump's, he keeps giving them material. Quit giving them material and they want anything to make fun of. that's kind of, really, they didn't do a very good job making fun of President Obama because he didn't give them very good material. There just wasn't much there to make fun of, you know, for good or bad. That's just how it was. So he needs to get over himself on that one. And I'm actually worried about Alec Baldwin's safety sometimes because the way things go, the way he's being so thin-skinned. But
are you kidding?
Talk about
New Yorkers. Alec Baldwin is a New Yorker. He's buddies with all the police and the firemen. And, I'm not worried about him.
Well, no, it won't happen. It won't happen in New York. They'll get him when he goes somewhere else. But let's continue on talking about the protest. Past week, on one hotel, and I'm not sure which hotel it was, somebody image up. Tell us the hotel. It was what?
It was the Crown Regal, is that what it's called downtown?
Crown something. Yeah, Regal sounds like a theater, but I mean, it's like something else. The Crown Plaza.
Crown Plaza.
But yeah, it's Crown Plaza. That sounds right. And so they projected bleep Trump. Now, of course, you know, once again, I'm not too hurt for Donald, although I think I texted to y'all, I might like to see something more issue-based because it might have more effect. Because I guess I'm beginning to look at it, don't protest to the 40-45% of the people that are completely against him. Don't really bother protesting to the 35-40 hardcores he's got, percent of the hardcores he's got. Try to do protests that are going to sway that middle 20-30. And therefore, if you talk about policies, maybe the protest has a better effect. Tim, you kind of had thoughts then. Share those.
Yeah, I sort of disagree with you. For one thing, that thing went viral, and it was all over the Internet. if you wanted to get something out there, buddy, that got out there and real fast. And again, I want to remind you, that's the kind of stuff they did to Obama. And they thought it was great. I want to see how that bunch takes it when it's done to them, because it's going to be done to them. That sort of thing's not going to stop. It's going to keep going on. And, you know, the vice president, and if Trump goes to the wrong place, he's going to have some booze, too. That's just the way it is, especially if they go to a place where there's the entertainment industry or big sports venues or something like that. They are going to get some booze. That's just going to happen. That man has got to develop a thicker skin. And I don't know what you thought they could have thrown up on that building that would have swayed anyone. I think that served it.
And who are you trying to sway? He's been elected. He's going to be the president.
I'm talking about when they go to repeal the health care expansion. You know, what they're going to do to our environment. Things like that, and it may have zero impact, but I just know that a lot of people that might be on your side, when you get crass, turn it off a little more than when you would talk about an issue. And it probably, in the scheme of things, you do it one way, you wouldn't have swayed anybody. You do it the way you did, you probably didn't turn that many people off. It's not a huge difference either way, but I just want to see it when we start having, if you know, protests continue, they need to be issue based more and more, especially like ones out in the street. If they repeal HCA on the first day and there's a protest on the second day, it definitely needs to be, you know, about putting that back. Now, of course, the criticism then would go on Trump, Ron McConnell, and everybody else, like it should. Well, let's take a little more time to get into some of these nominees before our guest, DNC member, Rome City Councilwoman Wendy Davis, calls in here in about 5 to 7 minutes. But let's start talking about what we know. Tim, you've begun to compile a list. What are some of the names that we either know are going to be nominated or are rumored to be nominated?
Well, Steve Bannon is going to be a senior policy advisor. We know that. We know Jeff Sessions is the guy for attorney general. We pretty much figure that Michael Flynn, the retired slash fired general, is going to be a national security advisor. We know that Congressman Mike Pompeo is going to be the director of the CIA. And we know that Rance Priebus is going to be the chief of staff. There was rumors about Mitt Romney, but apparently their meeting, according to some inside baseball folks, didn't go, you know, real warmly, shall we say. So I don't look for Romney to be asked to be anything. But the Washington Post has come up with a great list of possible people for all of these different cabinet posts. And just going down through here, here's Sonny Perdue's name as a possibility for the Secretary of Agriculture. I kid you not. And then we go down to Secretary of Commerce, and there's David.
You guys, we can have a national Go Fish program.
Yeah. And then we go down to Commerce, and there's David Perdue.
Yeah.
If you people want a Georgia connection, Mike Huckabee is Secretary of Commerce. Oh my goodness.
And I've also heard Bastard at Israel with him too.
How about this one, David? Defense Secretary Kelly Ayotte. Somebody explain.
Oh
that
my God.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's got his little pool of people. You know, my hope was somehow he would pull some of these blue, purple state people that are Republicans in, so we could win some seats back. But apparently,
but
a lot of them
appointed,
are not elected,
right?
Officials. They get appointed, and if they get appointed, they vacate their seats. Jeff Sessions will vacate his seat. And then, of course, you get appointed short-term, but they will have to hold an election. I'm not sure of every state's law, but you will hold an election at some point. So Governor Bentley, who's under, you know, much, much scrutiny, is going to be the one making an appointment.
They run as an incumbent, so.
Yes.
I mean,
and so, but they're not a long-term incumbent. You know, and it varies, like I said, from state to state. Some states may give you till the next even year election. Other ones may hold a special. You know, just in some are very, very short-term appointments. You know, because we saw what happened with when Ted Kennedy passed away. Scott Brown, that election, Martha Coakley was supposed to, you know, almost be a slam dunk. And then, you know, Scott Brown was able to win it. We need opportunities like that to gain some ground, hopefully. I mean, at least something good could come out of this. But if like Alabama, it's going to be hard to win.
I think they'll be very careful about where they make those appointments. They'll make them in states where the governor will appoint the replacement and with the longest lead. I mean, they'll be very careful about that.
And Republicans, yeah.
Yeah.
Rance Priebus is going to be doing most of the appointments then, because that's somebody that would know. I don't think Trump would have any clue.
Here's a good one for you guys. How about a possible Health and Human Services Secretary, Tom Price? Does that one grab
you?
Yeah, I saw that one. Yeah. Oh, but by the way, my favorite one was that apparently they discussed a possible appointment for Ben Carson, and Ben Carson somehow decided he was unqualified to be a cabinet secretary. Yet he, for some reason, was running for president, trying to make the American people assume that he was qualified for the job of presidency.
Made no real sense.
I think they told him they weren't going to appoint him to anything, and so this is his way to stay safe. Because he's more qualified to be Surgeon General than he is president.
I got the appointment of the year right here, boys and girls.
Go
the director of Homeland Security in the running is Sheriff Joe Arpaio. How does
of
that
course.
Work? Yeah, wouldn't that be sweet? Good God.
But they're just coming up with names because that gentleman's far too old for a new career.
Well,
you know,
he's one of three names, and the other two, one is that idiot McCall from Texas, and the other one's David Clark at Milwaukee County Sheriff. So it don't get much better either way you go.
Right. Yeah. Well, let me go ahead and welcome onto the show our favorite DNC member and Rome City Councilwoman, Wendy Davis. Wendy, welcome back to the Kudzu Vine.
Thanks for having me on. I think if we're going to talk about the horrible administration, maybe I'll not stay on very long.
Well, that wasn't really in our plan for you. That was for us. And so what we're going to do is we're going to start off talking a little bit about your thoughts on what happened. Then we'll switch over and we'll look forward to the future of the Democratic Party. And so, therefore, you won't have to delve into the other side and get into the inner workings of Steve Bannon's mind. Sound like a plan?
Sounds great. Thanks.
All right. Well, let's start off, Wendy. I can't imagine you were any less shocked than Tim, Catherine, and I were at the results. You know, still, I think I saw we have a 3-point-something% lead in the popular vote, but we're still functioning under the Electoral College, and we lost it, and no one saw that coming. What is your thoughts on how this happened?
Well, shocked is correct, horrified is correct, incredulous. You know, pick your word there. I mean, obviously, you know, y'all have heard me talk about this before, and we have talked and talked and talked about how it doesn't matter how good we do in our solid Democratic precinct turning out the vote, and there was room for improvement this time, but even if you get turnout up in the 90% range in our key base precincts, if you still ignore the red and purple precincts and counties and states, you're going to bleed out. And you're going to bleed out so badly that no amount of good work in, you know, at home is going to help. And I think that's what happened again. I'm trying to take my brain away from the first place it went, because the first place it went was this is sexism, 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 and sexism. And that doesn't just make me angry; it makes me incredibly sad to feel that way.
Yeah, and obviously there's probably a lot of reasons, and with some voters, you know, that was probably the right place to go, but it didn't explain everyone, obviously. I mean, there's just so many different facets of people that would have voted for Hillary Clinton didn't turn out. Then people just switched their vote in some of these ex-urban places and the Rust Belt, and it just kind of shocking. Wendy, I know you've worked in places like rural Pennsylvania and other places. Have you heard stories, or I guess you were in Pittsburgh this past week. Have you heard stories about why people think the Rust Belt in particular switched?
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, it was the same thing. We didn't put any energy in those communities. And if you don't play, I was actually with some locals the other night, and they were like, you know, the margin, you know, you don't expect Democrats to win out there, but the margins were so out of whack, you know, before the Democrat would have lost by 5% or 7%, and Trump won with like a 20% margin. It was terrific. Yeah, the margins were just like you saw where we live in Floyd County.
Yeah.
Just skewed even further than they normally would be by a large margin.
Yes. Well, let me go ahead and pass it to Tim to talk about the election before we move forward. Tim?
Wendy, what effect do you think, with 11 days to go, it seemed that we were poised for a possible blowout, and then this letter came from the FBI. Do you think several million votes were switched right there?
You know, at the time, I didn't think so. I mean, I kind of thought the people who already felt so negative towards her just had it reinforced, but I didn't necessarily see it moving people. But obviously, more people paid attention to the front end of that story than the pathetic and quietly discussed tail end of that story, right? So I feel like it must have had an impact.
And another thing, we kept hearing this whole campaign that if all else failed, there would be this vaunted turnout ground operation that the Clinton campaign had, that the Trump campaign basically did not have. We heard about all of these field offices, all of these ops in all of these states. And in some of these states, like, Wisconsin, Michigan, and some others, that just never did seem to materialize. What was it, all a mirage, or have you heard anything about what could have possibly happened to this vaunted turnout operation they were supposed to have?
Well, I mean, I think the Clinton team dropped the ball with their you know, they had their projections that they were far enough ahead that they didn't have to focus there. And however, I don't think that the Republicans had some boots on the ground sort of turnout machine that we didn't see coming, right? I think the turnout machine was the anger and resentment. I don't think it was, you know, a campaign operation, which, again, is part of what horrifying, you know, my business, my career has been spent that the campaign operation matters, right? And everything I knew to be true about how important campaigns were was thrown upside down, sideways, and every direction but the way I was expecting in this cycle with what Trump did with his campaign.
Yeah, take it from a guy that just spent 5 months in a campaign elections office that is very true. With that, I'll send it over to Catherine.
Hi, Wendy. First, I want to apologize for not reaching out to you since the election. I think we've all been sort of sheltered in place and not reaching out, but I know you've been suffering like all of us, and I apologize for not making an effort to speak to you about it. And I really latch on to what you just said about all the things that we believe about elections, about turnout, about data. You know, we've all been so focused on all this data and, you know, Vote Builder and how important it is. And the thing I've been wondering about and thinking about is this, do we think this is just an anomaly because it was Donald Trump and he had this sort of unbelievably strong latch on this hatred that seemed to drive people to the polls? Or is this the new normal? Is this the kind of, like, do we have to reexamine every sort of part of how we campaign and how we elect people in order to win? I guess that's what I've been thinking about, among other things.
Well, I don't get me wrong. I don't want to say that analysis isn't important, because it is very important. And we need to see, you know, what the real numbers are, but I also, and again, partly because, you know, I am who I am and my path has been where it has been, you know, from, you know, the moment I got into grad school, you know, and the people around me, the political scientists with an emphasis on the science, you know, were saying there are only four or five factors that really impact an election, right? And their economic variables and whether the incumbent party, you know, the incumbent vice president is on the ticket and how popular of a sitting president is and whether the candidate is of that president's party or not. And that whole model said it didn't matter what you did with a campaign, right? And this was a long time ago, so it was like it didn't matter that Bill Clinton could feel your pain and was able to communicate it. And I just couldn't buy that. And I still won't buy that this reality TV model that we just saw of the Trump campaign of being able to find that vein to stoke that anger and resentment and fear, I don't want to think that that's the new normal. But I'm going to be a lot more attentive to those efforts when I see them down the road.
Okay, that makes sense. I wasn't saying that it was just the hate that it wasn't not just that topic, but just that method of, you know, I mean, like we said, they really didn't have any ground game. They just latched on to something. And, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be negative, though it usually is more effective. So, but I think it's going to be really interesting as we move forward and sort of analyze how and talk about how we win elections. In the especially national elections, obviously, I think it probably doesn't have much impact on our local elections because they're not as, you know, not as big a game. I'm going to pass it back to David.
Yes, Wendy, you mentioned the sitting incumbent president. He has somewhere in the high 50s approval rating right now. I've seen as high as 58, 56, 57, all in there. Why was his popularity not able to translate onto Hillary Clinton, or at least bring people to the polls to essentially protect his legacy? Because in a lot of ways, it looks like if Trump and the other Republicans have their way, there won't be much left of President Obama's 8 years in office if they get to do what they plan.
Well, I think the legacy meant more to the people who didn't like President Obama than the people who did like him. So, I mean, I think that, again, Trump was very effective in that messaging of, you know, the anti-Obamacare and, you know, all those racist and not even undertones, you know, overtones. I think it was more motivating. You know, stopping Obama's third term was more motivating to that side than continuing his legacy was to our side.
Yes, I just look at those numbers. I mean, it seems a bit vexing, if you will. Although the funny thing is the other two presidents that have equal or higher than President Obama, President Clinton and President Eisenhower, their party lost after their two terms as well. So it seems to be a hard thing to pull off is to get your third term, even if you are in the high 50s, like all three gentlemen were. Well, let me move this conversation on to the future. The Democratic Party, I know we all have questions. I know you actually heard at least one candidate for DNC chair, but before you get into those candidates, do you think that job should be a full-time person that does nothing else other than be DNC chair, or can it be someone that holds elective office, or is it not always this or that for you?
My personal feeling is that part of our Debbie Wasserman Schultz problem was that being a member of Congress, she already had two full-time jobs before she took on a DNC job. Every member of Congress obviously has the job of governing, but they also have the job of getting reelected. And those dynamics not only take a lot of time and energy, but sometimes they kind of conflict with what you need to do as the head of the DNC. And so that's one thing that I'm feeling very strongly about, is that I want it to be someone who this is their day job, this is their night job, this is what their focus is on and what they're doing around. And we have a lot of work to do.
Yes. My thought is I would even see not so much even a past elected official. I see the DNC job as somewhat of a coach, an organizer, and so therefore maybe look at some of these top shelf political operatives. You know, if David Axelrod would do it, Paul Begala would do it. I mean, I don't think that model's been tried, but the way I read the job to be, that's not a bad thing to have someone that really knows the nuts and bolts of campaigning. Is that kind of an off-base thought, or is there more to the job that I'm not seeing?
Well, that's not really off-base. I mean, there are a lot of people who are saying, you know, that somebody like Van Jones ought to do it.
Yeah.
I love Paul Begala, and think he's really brilliant. And so I, like, wouldn't sneeze at that if he wanted to stop all the other stuff he was doing and do that full time. But I think there tends to be this sense of having it be an elected official or former elected official. But you've got to have that balance between someone who has the vision and the drive and, I guess maybe it's an overused word, but sort of the gravitas, right? It's somebody who can be understood and have the credibility to be leading the national conversation about the direction of the party.
Yes. Well, I could continue to ask questions in this vein, but I'm going to be fair to Tim and Catherine and pass it along. Tim, questions about the future of the Democratic Party?
Yeah, not sub you to be fair, buddy. We like that on this show. You know what I mean? Anyway, I got a question about a guy. You know, Howard Dean has put himself forward as a candidate, and he has something in his hip pocket, and that's the fact that he was very, very, very successful as the head of the DNC with his 50-state strategy, and he won big. What about someone who has already done this job before as a possibility, Wendy?
Well, Governor Dean is the one person who's had the job before who I would consider rehiring, right? In my limited experience, I was a huge fan of the 50-state strategy from its initiation. I am blessed to have a lot of friends who joined the party who were DENIACs, right? And a number of them stayed and have added enormous value to the party, and I'm glad they're still around, right? And he's someone who I would give serious consideration to. Now, the downside, in my opinion, of Governor Dean is it does feel a little been there, done that. But I've heard just a little bit of what he has to say. I wish he had been able to rearrange his schedule to come to this meeting in Pittsburgh that Congressman Ellison was able to come to, but it was really short notice. But he has obviously reiterated the return to the 50-state strategy, and in my mind, if any candidate does not promote that, they're not getting my vote. It's what we've got to do. In my opinion, we don't just need to have a 50-state strategy. We need to have an every county in every state strategy.
As far as DNC members, national leaders of the party, whoever, do you sense the party is in disarray and what do we do type thought process from many people?
You know, frankly, I think disarray is maybe not the most accurate word. We're all, you know, as sort of Catherine mentioned earlier, you know, we just got hit upside the head from a punch we didn't see coming.
Well,
right?
let me throw another word in, Wendy. Is shell shocked a better
word?
Yeah,
that's the word.
Much better word. And again, it's obviously the Democrats at the national level were not able to communicate that they understood the pain that is so relevant to so many families across our country. And I don't believe they didn't get it, because I think they know it's out there. But we, just as a national party, have not been the ones that were relatable, who, as I mentioned before, the Bill Clinton Feel Your Pain, we didn't get there. We didn't focus on the economy and those economic fears in a way that moved people our direction. And that was a miss, right? That was a glaring error on our part.
All right. Let me throw it over to Catherine. Catherine?
Well, I just want to make one remark at the risk of being that person. It's important for all of us to remember that Secretary Clinton did get, when we're saying, like 1.5 million more votes than Donald Trump. So we didn't completely fail. We just failed in targeting the proper places. So I think that's the thing. That's why the 50-state strategy and things like that are so important. But, I mean, we can't be completely completely disappointed in all our efforts, because we did do a lot. We worked hard. Everybody worked hard. You know, Wendy, I'm a huge Howard Dean fan, and I was happy to see that he was interested. I'm concerned that he has some baggage since his last role, since he last served as DNC chair, now that he's been a lobbyist for medical and insurance companies and pharmaceutical companies. I think a lot of people are criticizing him for that, and I'm wondering, I mean, it doesn't, I'm fine with it, but I just worry that it might not be, he might not be able to get the kind of enthusiastic support that he would get if he hadn't done that. Also, you know, can we at least talk about someone that's not a white guy over 50?
Amen.
I mean, we could talk about Van Jones, so that's good. But, you know, I think aside from the whole multiple roles that an elected official makes, one of the main reasons that I always say that I'd like to see omit elected officials from these party leadership roles is that we have a lot of very smart people who serve our party as volunteers and staff, and it would be nice to give them the opportunity to show their leadership. And I think we have a lot of them, a lot of younger people, a lot of women, a lot of women of color, a lot of men of color, a lot of LGBTQ people, a lot of immigrants, a lot of people out there that we could learn something from, and that we'll be able to draw additional people in. So I'd be really happy to learn that at least they were being talked about. And can we just, like, leave David Axelrod and Paul Begala out of it? They were both completely wrong. They talked about this election for months ahead of time, and on every occasion they said we were going to win. So they've lost my support.
Well, Catherine, if we had to make a list of people that thought we were going to lose that were Democrats, Wendy would have to vote on about two different people in all of America.
I'm talking about people who had very – David, I'm talking about people who had very visible roles and were very encouraging. They were not hesitant at all. And they're
they both won.
They're white
two
guys over 60. I'm done with white guys over
60. Well, but I mean, done. But Catherine, if you said that a white guy over 50 could get the job done, and
no,
a person
I don't think they can.
That didn't fit that criteria couldn't, I'm not saying I wanted the best person, and I'm interested in the Van Jones idea.
I don't think there's a best person.
But just excluding
that's a white
someone
guy over
60. Because of their demographic quality is no better than people in the Trump administration excluding people because of their demographic qualities. It's just reverse Jeff Sessions, and that ain't right. You ought to look at everybody by the content of their character. Wendy,
okay.
I'm sorry. I'm sure you had a question for Wendy in there, but we ought to get back to that. I'm sorry.
Anyway, I hope that the DNC will entertain some diversity in their choices, at least in their consideration.
Well, I mean, right now the leading contender is Keith Ellison, who is not only African-American, but he's also a Muslim. And he has rolled out, gosh, it's probably approaching 70 endorsements of, you know, key party leaders, including, you know, a strong note, Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. And I'd love to talk about, you know, the opportunity I had to hear directly from him in Pittsburgh this week. But let me throw in another. I hope that we end up having a very a field with a great deal of variety in it to pick from. I'm actually very excited because I was expecting when Hillary won, she'd just tell us who she wanted to be chair, and we'd go, yes, ma'am, okay. And so as a DNC member, I haven't had many opportunities to make a vote that was actually a real contest kind of vote. And so I am delighted that this looks like it might be a real contest, and I hope it is. I hope we end up having certainly people are talking about four different Hispanic leaders. I believe all the ones I've heard so far are men, but that's a level of diversity we haven't really had, including Henry Munoz, who has done an amazing job.
Yeah, I would love to
fundraiser.
See that.
Right. I'm really disappointed that some of the women who were mentioned earlier have already ducked out. We need to have women competing for this role also. I think it would be quite shocking if we did not have a woman who was a strong contender for this position moving forward.
Thank you for your work, Wendy.
Oh,
I know it must be...
Yes.
It must be very hard some days, and we all appreciate it.
Well, thank you for saying that. It is hard some days. The thing that makes it hard is that people have this impression of who DNC members are as if the whole lot of us were some sort of fat cat, you know, well-connected, big-shot insider kind of people. And yeah, there are people like that on the DNC. I'm not denying it. But so many of us are people like me who have just been, you know, laboring out there as a volunteer, you know, working hard year after year, cycle after cycle. And there are so many of us who are committed to thinking more long-term. My biggest problem with the DNC through the years has been it's all about electing a president, just like so often the party here in Georgia was about just electing a governor, and we didn't have vision beyond that, and it was so driven by the personalities. And we've got to have not even a 20-year horizon. We've got to be thinking about a 50-year horizon and really thinking big and really being strategic. And that's one of the things that if we're going to stop and reevaluate things, David was kind enough to mention, you know, that I'm a city commissioner, which is like a city council person, and I happen to be the chair of the Georgia's chapter of the Democratic Municipal Officials Organization that is trying to reconnect city officials who are Democrats with the party and the party with them. And I was just added this week. I joined the national board of the DMO. And that's why I was in Pittsburgh for those meetings. And what we are trying to get the party to focus on is the fact that we have to reach down at that local level. And there are literally tens of thousands of city and county elected officials who are Democrats. Many of the city people are elected in nonpartisan races, but they're still Democrats, and we have not connected those people to the party. We have not activated those people to be leaders in the party, and it's a mistake we've made that we can no longer continue to make. So the group I'm in, the Democratic Municipal Officials, they put together a letter that they're sending to all the candidates saying, you know, we have three DMO members who sit on the DNC, and then there are people like myself and Anita Bond and Mayor Reed, right, who are DNC members who aren't the official DMO DNC members, but they're local elected officials nonetheless, and saying that we need a commitment from the party to focus on these, rebuilding our bench, rebuilding our base from that ground up, making those connections and building those leaders and thinking long term and not just going presidential cycle to presidential cycle. The number of people who are like, I'm upset, I'm mad, I want to help, I want to do something, we're going to make things happen in 2018. Don't skip past 2017.
Right.
You know, not only do I have to get reelected, and I appreciate all of your help and support in that regard, but, you know, there are city, we have all those elections in the city of Atlanta. I mean, we are going to have hundreds of people elected here in Georgia, thousands of people elected across the country next. And we need to be paying attention to those races. We need to be recruiting strong, capable people to run in those races. And this woman who was our DMO of the year spoke so eloquently at our breakfast the other morning and saying that we all have to have succession plans. She was talking to the people who've been on city council 20 years, 25 years. And she's like, she basically said, y'all need to go, but don't just leave. Find somebody to take your spot. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really important message that I'm hoping more people think about and take to heart.
You know, I say that to people almost every day. Because also, the other thing, piece of that is that the legislation and work that affects our lives most closely happens at the city and state level.
It does indeed.
It does, and people just don't realize it.
The number didn't stick in my head because it was too horrifying, but the number of legislators we've lost across the country.
Yeah, it's bad.
It's horrible. It's horrible. So again, we're thinking just at the federal level as a party, right, nationally, and we need to fix that.
Yeah, it's kind of the reverse of the problem. When I kind of first, you know, followed politics in the 80s, we didn't have the presidency, but we had the House, the Senate, all these state legislatures, and now it's completely reversed where, and of course, we don't even have the White House now. We have less power than any time since, I believe it's 1928, at least on the federal level. Maybe even worse when you consider how bad we're doing in the state legislatures across the South when we probably had those legislatures back in the 20s. So it's quite sober, and it needs to be fixed top to bottom. Well, Wendy, we thank you for coming on. And as this election progresses, of course, you know, at some point in the future, we'll call on you to be on again. Hope you're willing.
Well, my pleasure. And the great news, too, is the election is going to be in late February in Atlanta. So it will be exciting right in our backyard.
All right. We'll have to hear more about that before the time happens.
Thanks for having me on, y'all.
Thanks, Wendy.
Thank you, Wendy.
Yes, well, I don't know. Maybe we can cover that live somehow, depending on what the access is like. But, you know, between now and February, that's a long time to digest and think about this. But there's one more story that I want to get to before it begins in the rearview mirror, because to me it is just starts the Trump administration off under such a cloud. I mean, it seems like there's, you know, a sky full of them. We need them down here so we can actually get some rain. But the Trump University, he settled the case. Now, of course, he said, I could have won it. He settled it for $25 million, even though they made $175 initially, so therefore he pocketed $150 million. You know, just seems like he kind of won, even though he settled, Tim.
Yeah.
I know you're not surprised this went away. What's your thoughts on it?
Yep, I'm not surprised at all it went away, and I believe that a lot of the other stuff he's facing, some of the other suits and things, they're going to go away too. And it just seems like, no, you talk about a Teflon guy. They used to call Ronald Reagan the Teflon president. No, this guy, nothing's sticking to him. Nothing. I mean, so many things in the last year and a half just by themselves should have just immediately discussed, and nothing is sticking to it. And it's almost maddening, as if you think, well, it's hopeless. There seems to be nothing we can do. We've just never seen anything like this. You get to the point where you really don't know what to say anymore. But because we've never seen anything like this.
It's just that 44% of voters that voted for him, they just don't seem to be persuaded by anything that came up. I mean, sexual assault, ripping off of aspiring college students. I mean, a lot of times these folks were, I guess, later life students, but all these different things that should have disqualified him by one thing, there was a myriad of them, and none of them could take him down. Catherine, your thoughts on the Trump University settlement?
I I'm not surprised. Of course, I'm. You know, it's an odd thing. You know, it's like I'm not surprised, but I'm shocked. It doesn't surprise me, but it's shocking that it happened. So it's this combination of, it's a strange sense of I guess disappointment, but not surprise. And you're right. Both of you are absolutely right. It's like nothing, nothing sticks, and sort of wait and see. Well, is this going to stick? You know, we thought that the sexual harassment or, sexual assault claims might stick. No, they didn't stick. Making fun of disabled people, that didn't stick. None of these, the racism, the all of it, we just expected. I think we all expect something like that to just, like you said, disqualify a person, but it didn't. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I mean, what is he, the devil?
Yeah, I mean, you have the casual at best, complete non-understanding of nuclear weapons at worst.
Yeah,
The fact that he, showed that, the climate change is a Chinese hoax. And that's one thing I'll tell you, in my personal opinion, all the things that Donald Trump can screw up over the next 4 years, and I certainly hope it's just four, the ground we may lose on our environment may be unrepairable. You know, he can destroy the healthcare system, and we can build it back up. He could destroy the education system. He could probably launch some nuclear weapons, and we might come back as humanity after a while. But if he, if our environment, our ozone layer, everything else is destroyed, there may not be – I don't see any real coming back from that, at least the science I understand. Tim?
No, I don't either. The thing is, though, these things didn't cut as issues in this campaign. I would bet you that 40% of the American people agree with Trump that global warming is a hoax because they don't see it happening in their backyard. You know, they're not looking at the long-range thing at what is actually going on, and they just don't believe it. I don't know if you call it human nature or what. They don't believe it. The things that he said about the abortion issue, it's not a cutting issue in presidential politics, and really it never has been. People that vote one issue are going to vote a certain way anyway. And there's no switching them. It just seems the things that Trump said that we thought so bizarre just didn't cut.
Well, you remember I shared with y'all that fact that 20% of Americans think that the Earth is the center of, the universe. That tells you those are, if 20% think that, you double that to think it's a hoax. But here's the thing. The people that know, the scientists, they know he's wrong.
I mean, and the people that are smart enough to listen to the scientists, they know he's wrong.
Well, I think
so. We're talking doubling those folks that think that the Earth is the center of the universe, even though Galileo, you know, disproved that hundreds of years ago. I mean, that's some of the people we're dealing with. I still want to see a poll. I want Tom Jensen to do a poll. Do you think the Earth is round or flat? It would be in the double digits, and that's scary. Catherine?
I was just going to say, I think this all also goes to this dismissal of science. And, you know, people aren't interested in science anymore. Or interested in what smart scientists say. It doesn't get the same credibility that it should because, you know, they're liberal.
You know why?
Yeah.
Because there's a whole political party in this country getting votes and getting elected by denying science, by saying global warming is a hoax. There's a whole political party, one of our major political parties, is making a living on this, and they're not going to change. They're not going to do it until they're swept out of office.
Well, science is just not good for business all the time. And
exactly.
That's just an inconvenient fact for some of them. But some people, they function on the bottom line dollar, and therefore they don't want to hear a bunch of science facts. They want to see how much money can be made.
When nature calls the bill in, they're not going to be collecting all that money they're making. That's not going to do them any good then. But we know
that. Oh, absolutely, you know. And that's what's so short-sighted. But we'll have many, many more weeks to discuss the me thinking of a lot of folks. Well, I want to thank again Wendy Davis for coming on the show. And till next week, have a happy Thanksgiving. That's been the Kudzu Vine.
Good night, guys.
Good night, guys.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic experience.